Okay. Good afternoon. I'm Reuven Hess. I'm a program manager in SQL Server. I work on SQL Server Parallel Data Warehouse. And today we'll be covering how you can use SQL Server PDW to run hundreds of terabytes of data in your BI solutions, with a specific focus on features we introduced in AU3 and their relevance in BI solutions. Quick show of hands. How many people here have heard about PDW? That's a good chunk. How many here are intimately familiar with PDW, maybe even have used PDW? Two or three? Okay. So there's a bit of a mixed crowd, so I'll spend just a few minutes on the trends in the data warehousing space and why something like SQL Server PDW exists, how we fit into the full Microsoft lineup, and what's new in AU3 and how we do shared nothing MPP. And then we'll dive into the AU3 functionality, how it's relevant in BI solutions, and then some customer success stories, as well as some details on the BI integration. Just to set expectations, there's a lot of really good BI courses and sessions here. So I'm going to focus less on actual demos of AS and RS and Power Pivot. The goal of PDW really is to fit into your existing infrastructure like a normal SQL Server. So if we're doing our jobs right, it'll look the same. There's a short demo on Power Pivot, and there's a demo on Hadoop. And then we'll spend a bit of time showing you what's next in PDW. So with that, I don't think these trends are new to anybody. Sometimes termed the data explosion, sometimes termed something else. But there's more data, used more often, and the restrictions from governments are increasing in terms of your archiving time periods. The expectations in terms of analysis are increasing. So just over a short period of 2 to 3 years, if you look at sort of the distribution of how customer environments expect to increase the average size of data warehouse, is quite staggering. So the requirements are clear. You need performance at scale. Whatever solutions you have, they need to be able to scale and perform at that scale. In that same context, it's not only performing at a particular high scale, but also the ability to scale linearly and to have a solution that has a future. So with that, there's sort of a trend in the industry that there's a move towards an appliance model, because a balanced appliance offers you the speed and offers you the scalability and offers you quick time to solution. So I wanted to also give you a bit of context here and in many other sessions throughout the world and Microsoft, non-Microsoft, there's a lot of buzz around cloud. So how does a new appliance like SQL Server PDW fit into that trend? So for data warehousing in particular, the cloud is definitely part of the picture. It's definitely part of the future. But if you look more in the time frame of the next 3 to 4 to 5 years, appliances are actually the key trend. Cloud data warehousing is there. It'll come. It's more of a long-term trend. And so for the immediate future, if you need high tier one, high-end data warehousing, it's probably an appliance that you or your customers are looking at. So how does PDW fit into that picture? PDW is a shared nothing MPP data warehousing appliance. It's scalable from tens of terabytes to hundreds of terabytes. And as a shared nothing MPP solution, it scales linearly as you add hardware. It's standards-based, so we use commodity hardware. We understand standard SQL Server SQL, and we use SQL Server clients. And it's flexible, so both in terms of the hardware can be of, we work with multiple vendors. So if in an environment you're using HP or using Dell, it's your choice of hardware. The exact configuration of disks, there's multiple options in terms of high capacity versus performance, etc. And there's ways to integrate it into hub and spoke model with existing SQL Server data marts to sort of really fit into the solution that you need in the environment. and it's very cost effective. We have class-leading price performance, but also we have now a new low entry point with a half rack that allows you to get there faster. And then because it's sort of an optimized pre-tuned package, there's less sort of customization, less tuning, less effort in the beginning, which leads to both lower cost as well as to quicker time to solution. So more specifically, what does this look like? And we don't need to dive into the details of every single node, but at a high level, what you have in an appliance is a control rack and a data rack. From sort of the, you know, where does the data sit perspective, that's all in the data rack. The data is distributed across all the different compute nodes that each have their dedicated storage. And this is what I meant with some of the pre-tuned aspects of the system. We carefully balanced it all to make sure that there aren't any bottlenecks, too little I.O. to satisfy the processors or too little memory to satisfy I.O., et cetera, et cetera. So the system is optimized end-to-end, and so the alignment of partitions and so forth is optimized. And then on the front end, you have the control nodes, which is what you interact with as sort of an end user, and what to you looks like just a normal instance of SQL Server. And we have management and landing zone and backup nodes, which have to do with sort of the health management of the appliance and sort of the patching, et cetera. Landing zone is sort of your ETL sandbox, and then the backup node has an obvious purpose with sort of the backup and archival function. When you run a query, you from sort of the customer perspective, you run it against the control node. What's really happening behind the scenes, managed for you, is the query runs against all the compute nodes. So how does that work in terms of, I mentioned the data is distributed across. So if you have your typical schema here, obviously quite simplified for the example, the smaller dimension tables, they will sit replicated across all the different nodes. And the distributed nature of the system kicks in with the big sales facts table in this case, or just the big facts tables that are split up and where a particular row of data only exists on one distribution somewhere in the system. So I mentioned it before. So you run the query against the control node. From sort of a client perspective, all you see is a SQL Server. You connect. You run your query. The control node figures out how to best optimize to parallelize the query and sends the individual query steps to all the different control nodes, compute nodes. And it's a shared nothing system. So depending on your query, it might have to satisfy something that isn't distribution aligned, in which case we have a data movement service that moves the data back and forth so that you can satisfy the queries. Now, just a tiny bit more data on sort of what that means in terms of the distribution. That went through a bit too fast. But when you look at a particular query, and you're looking at color, we actually have a distribution here on SSID. So if I'm looking at a particular color, those rows might actually exist on multiple nodes. So the shuffle move makes sure that we now move all the values of one type onto a particular node. Now, for this particular example, I'll give you that's such a simple example. The SQL Server would probably optimize this query differently. But if you have a longer example with joins against fact tables, that's when the shuffle kicks in. And then from the different compute nodes that are all working on this in parallel, we merge and aggregate the results and return them as one result set. We don't need to get into too much detail here. SQL Server PDW is built leveraging the existing building blocks and the existing products from Microsoft and from SQL Server in particular. So on the back end, it is actual SQL Server that's doing the heavy lifting. On the front end, you're actually also using a SQL Server to do the control shell. We're built on Windows, and we leverage Active Directory, etc. So while SQL Server PDW is a relatively recent addition, the components that we've been using have been in industry and have been enterprise grade for a long, long time. So AU3 is a really big release for us. We had three release themes: performance at scale, which is to do less work for the same results, and to do the same amount of work more effectively, more efficiently. We did a lot of work around SQL Server compatibility, and we'll get into more details there, around broader functionality and on offering a more complete alignment with normal SQL Server. And there's work been done in the BI, analytics, and ETL integration. So just to step back, so SQL Server PDW originates from an acquisition. So we moved a system that was based on Linux, using Java, et cetera, to something that works in our environment and that is optimized for our environment. What that meant was that, you know, this was sort of the picture pre-AU3. And without going into all the details and all the little boxes, there's a lot of stuff that's involved in just everyday DBMS, just the basics around parsing and authorization, the whole security management, et cetera, that we had built in that system. And, you know, the problem here is obvious, right? All of that already exists in SQL Server. So the challenge for the AU3 release was to leverage SQL Server as much as we can and to focus the efforts of the PDW team on the MPP-related challenges. So the way this works now is that SQL Server runs as a shell appliance on the control node. And every database, every object exists on the control node without the user data. And DDL and large parts of the RDBMS functionality just exist and just work against the control node as it would with a normal SQL Server. So if you're doing a query against a security system, or if you're authorizing a query, all of that is exactly the same code and the same path as a normal SQL Server. And when you execute a query that actually uses user data, we do the query plan compilation and optimization and parallelization on the control node, and then execute against the compute nodes. So you issue a query. The query is sent to SQL Server, and SQL Server does all the optimization that it normally does, unaware of the distributed nature of the system. We get that back. We optimize it based on the parallel MPP nature of the system. We run that against the different compute nodes, and the results are aggregated and returned to the user. So there are more details here. We don't need to go into all the little bullet points. But from a SQL Server perspective, that already means that the years and years of optimization that we've done on normal SQL Server, we benefit from all of those. So the query is standardized and simplified. You have this logical space exploration, including join reordering, the space expansion, the physical space exploration. All of that, we benefit from all of that. And the reason this is important from a BI perspective is that in AU2 and previous releases, the optimizer was relatively sensitive to how you ask the question, how you write your query. Benefiting from the SQL Server optimizer, now you can focus more on what do you want as a result, what should your query return, and the particular order of your join, et cetera, all of that is now less relevant. As I mentioned, the different plans that SQL Server generates come back to us, and we inject the data necessary to reflect the distributed nature of the system and to recognize that there are data moves potentially necessary to satisfy the query. And we cost those different alternatives and pick a plan that has minimum cost across the whole system. Based on that plan, we generate the adequate SQL to run on the compute nodes, and we send out the queries in parallel. just a bit of detail on sort of the cost model assumption without getting into the specific equation and so forth. Our cost model assumes that the cost of the data moves dominate the cost of the query. And for the sort of the heavy lifting data warehousing queries, that is a fairly good assumption in the vast majority of the times because of the fact that not only do the data moves typically contribute the vast majority of the cost, but if you minimize the data moves, you minimize the size of the intermediate data. And the intermediate data is what, at individual steps, introduces basically your compute cost as well. So the data movement operations then are modeled at quite some detail, both in terms of each data move. If you think about the system as a distributed system that's communicating between different nodes, has multiple steps associated with it and different tasks associated with it. And then there's, of course, in any kind of network communication like that, fixed and variable costs, both in terms of setting up the connections and setting up temp tables, et cetera, and then the variable cost in terms of how much data am I moving and so forth. An important assumption that we have in the system currently is that your data is relatively uniformly distributed. Now, again, that's something that you probably want to strive for anyway, because if you're in a distributed system and you're running in parallel, regardless of how we optimize, if you have a lot of data skew and one node's doing most of your work, you're in trouble in terms of leveraging the system optimally. So what this means sort of at a high level, bubbling back up, if I'm sending a query to the system, as sort of an easy example, a very short query in AU2 would have resulted in the an operator tree that does a shuffle relatively early on. And it actually does that on line item, which is, and this is against TPCH, and line item is the, one of the biggest tables around. In AU3, it takes what seems like a counterintuitive approach and actually does a broadcast, which is, from a data movement perspective, you know, initially it seems like a more expensive option, but because it uses the actual costing and the actual statistics, it understands that it's moving a lot less data. And even though it's you know, from the outside in, potentially a more costly approach, in this particular case, it's actually the optimal approach. So we've done a lot of testing, and we've done a lot of sort of verification, both in terms of customer workloads, and we'll see more details later, as well as just pitting our internal benchmark workloads against both AU2 and AU3. And the results are quite phenomenal. So this is a sales test workload that we have that sort of is abstracted from actual customer scenarios that sort of includes a broad set of queries. And on average, in this particular case, we've seen a 5x improvement in performance. And we'll get to, sorry, question? So in this case, this is identical hardware. Later we'll see some data from actual customer cases where it varies a bit. Sometimes we have the data only from sort of older hardware, and then we run it against newer hardware, and then we try to make it as apples as we can. But that's not always feasible in a real-world scenario. When we do our benchmarking in-house, when we have control of the environment, it's apples to apples. So this is identical hardware. Another thing I wanted to point out, and this is, came particularly into focus when we were working with actual customer workloads, is not only the average improvement, but the fact that the cost-based optimizer oftentimes really had a lot of benefit for the heaviest queries. So it pulled in sort of the worst-case scenario significantly, sometimes by magnitudes. So we just looked at, you know, doing less work for the same queries. We've also done a lot of optimizations around doing the same work more efficiently. We inherited a system that had the data movement service. We moved that to C#. In this iteration, we took another look at everything we've done, and we really sort of optimized sort of the bottleneck scenarios. One thing we looked at was the data movement service, where we eliminated CPU overhead where possible, and we had further efforts around parallelization. So what this means is both an individual data movement might actually be faster, and the sort of the overall resource consumption of the system got a lot better. So you have sort of improved concurrency. So the some of the movement operations were up to 6x faster, and then improved concurrency in terms of as a whole system. If you have multiple queries running in the system, you have less overhead.
Question.
Yes. This internally, we used ODBC in that case because given the specific framework already in use and sort of the overall system, we found that this was sort of the most performant solution. Just very quickly, this is kind of tangential to BI itself. So with all the work we did around compatibility, our security model and our metadata model are now much more aligned with normal SQL Server. What this means for you, when you're worried about moving a BI solution from an existing SQL Server to PDW, you can bring with it all your best practices around security. And you have the script reuse, and you can tell your customer, or if it's in your own environment, you can reuse the same best practices that you're used to. And you don't have to sort of think about a new security system, both in terms of the basic concepts like logins and roles, but more importantly also in terms of how does the system, given a particular complex hierarchy of roles and permissions, how can you guarantee that the system, if it previously allowed access, it will continue to allow access. If it previously denied access, it will continue to deny access. If you're moving from an SMP environment to PDW. And on the metadata side, we now have the existing SQL Server metadata views as provided by SQL Server on the control node. So while in AU2 we quote-unquote mimicked SQL Server, it is now actual SQL Server that is fulfilling those requests. And then we extended that with views that are specific to PDW. One of the most direct impacts of this is that all the tooling, both your own scripts as well as third-party tools that rely on these views, now have an easier time working with PDW. Related to that as well, so the original SQL Server PDW, as well as AU1 and AU2, used a SQL Server driver for PDW specifically. Starting with AU3, we actually support the normal SQL Server client. And this is quite exciting, actually. So what this means for us is not only do we have better integration with tools, and not only do customer environments not have to add an additional driver to their list of supported drivers, add another driver to the list of things that they manage, but SQL Server clients have actually been heavily optimized over the years. So when using the SQL Server client, we have a two-fold performance improvement in terms of the return rates, and we have a five-fold improvement in terms of the connection times and sort of the latency of the driver. And we'll see that in a moment in the demo, but the impact is striking. So, as you build BI solutions, as you interact with BI solutions, you're aware, you connect, you set up some basic settings, you look for tables, all of those send small queries back and forth to the servers. And this is sort of an addition, used to be an additional latency item every time around. Sorry, question? So what are the plans regarding SQL Server data tools? We'll get to that towards the end. I have a roadmap of all the different things. SQL Server data tools and SQL Server management studios, SSMS, are currently not supported, but we are working on supporting them in the next release. Around SQL Server compatibility, I already mentioned we did a lot of work, and one of the main items we focused on was around programmability and the support for stored procedures. So starting with SQL Server AU3, we have support for a basic set of stored procedure functionality. And I don't think I need to tell you this. A lot of reports, a lot of the AS cubes, et cetera, it's not unusual to find stored procedures encapsulating big chunks of the processing. And so with this, you have the typical logic reuse and the porting of existing scripts and so forth. And we'll see more details with sort of the customer environments. But despite some of the restrictions we currently still have in the system, we found that when we actually work with the customer environment, the vast majority of sort procedures, the vast majority of reports, actually can migrate to SQL Server PDW with little or no modification. So currently, we don't support stored procedure nesting. I should say recursive nesting or deep nesting. You can call a stored procedure from a stored procedure. You just can't, you know, chain that at an increasing depth. Or you can't call your own stored procedure recursively. You'll run out of nesting levels. And we don't support output parameters or return values and try-catch style error handling. One of the key feedbacks we had in previous versions of PDW was sort of increasing customer environments in sort of international environments or using international data and the need for collation support. So starting with AO3, we have support for collations, and we have a much easier time supporting both local and international data. We support fixed server-level collations, and then the user-defined at column level. And implicitly, the restriction here is we don't support specifying the collation at a database level. You have to specify it at a column level. And you can't alter a column at this point in time, alter the column collation once you've created it. The benefit is clear. We've had customers now really be able to store all the data in PDW from the various offices across the world. And the existing T-SQL DDL scripts and queries need a lot less rewriting if they were collation aware before. I mentioned BI integration, and we'll actually see the Hadoop connector at work later. We've done a lot of work in AU3 to connect to sort of the top tier one partners tools out there. So we have a connector for Hadoop, and this is a bidirectional import-export interface between Microsoft Hadoop and PDW. It has delimited file support, and it uses the existing tools. It uses the existing infrastructure on PDW to ensure that you really get parallel loads from the landing zone. And then we have a connector for Informatica. So if you have an environment that uses Informatica for the ETL needs, we are now a native destination and source. And again, it leverages the existing PDW infrastructure for bulk loads and for fast performance. And we have a connector for business objects, where again, with the data integrator, we can now work with SAP business objects. So now to the exciting part, the customer success stories and the demos. So I was asked before, is that the same hardware? So this is benchmarking we've done at an actual customer environment of their existing solution versus PDW. So this is where it gets complicated in terms of ensuring that it's exactly the same hardware. Their existing solution was on SMP. Naturally, the kind of hardware you buy for that environment is different from the commodity hardware scale-out solution that we have for PDW. And since it was an existing solution, the hardware was slightly older than the equivalent hardware that we benchmarked against. But even if you accommodate for that fact, if you look at the runtime differences, you can really see that if you throw enough data at the system, shared nothing MPP is the way to go. And the performance difference is just staggering. So if you look at that particular environment, they had 80 terabytes data warehouse. This is a stock exchange in the US. And their existing SQL Server system was based on an SMP farm with two different clusters of six servers each. So the total number of servers was about even with what we benchmarked against in PDW. And the difference being that in a normal approach, they actually had hit a workload where they had to split their data sets into two clusters. And then service basically by running against each cluster and then joining the results. Their requirements on the outset were linear scalability with additional hardware. That was sort of the primary driver, and this is also a primary driver for many of our customers. Whatever their situation is now, many of the environments have really, really high growth rates, projected and real. So whatever their investment is right now, that decision needs to be a solution that can guarantee to scale well and in the next 2 to 3 years. They also had sort of concurrency requirements, and they had the requirement to have hourly loads with queries running concurrently, around 300 gigabytes a day. And then finally, in terms of their end-to-end environment, they had a lot of investment into RS, AS, and PowerPivot, and the requirement was the BI integration needs to continue to be with those tools and with little or no migration costs. So this was actually a partner of ours in terms of working with AU3 early on, and we very carefully monitored and got feedback from them in terms of the stored procedure functionality, the prioritization of individual stored procedure functionality, and the feedback we got was that the stored procedure into SQL support was great. They migrated SSRS reports with no pain at all. They just moved the reports over to PDW. And the scan-heavy queries were 140 times faster. And the way that they had to think about the data changed. In their old system, they had a need to create summary tables and to take other additional steps to achieve sort of workable performance. What that also meant for them is, and this wasn't something that they had initially specified as a goal, but as they started working with PDW more, they realized that more complex queries that had always sort of been floating around as, you know, I wonder what we can achieve with this kind of query or that kind of query in terms of understanding their business better, were now feasible. So with introduction of PDW in the system, they got a lot more business value out of their BI solutions because they were able to ask the questions that previously would never finish or where you just error out. A similar customer environment to some extent in terms of their reliance on SSAS and RS, but very different in other aspects, was a major retailer in the U.S. They currently have around 40 terabytes in their data warehouse. And they have a very specific business need. And this will be familiar to you in Europe as well. As governments change their requirements around compliance and archival, in the US, for some data, there's a time window of 7 years. What happens is that the business users realize that A, wouldn't be so bad to think about that time window in general in terms of analyses, and B, I don't particularly know whether this type of data will in the future fall under the same regulation. I might not need 7 years now, but I just want to keep 7 years to be safe. So what's happening is you have sort of data explosion, not only in terms of there's more data that's interesting to me coming from more sources, but also as a business, I'm now moving towards considering bigger time windows. So similarly to the previous customer, primary driver was scalability. They can predict massive growth of data. They need a solution that will be able to keep up with it. And then sort of coming from that was, you know, as they thought about, okay, what do we need from a high-end tier one data warehouse, was a desire to move also to ad hoc queries. So previously relying a lot on reports and scheduled reports that, you know, sort of do the heavy lifting, they wanted to offer power users the ability to do ad hoc analysis straight against the system. When they moved to PDW, they moved all of their SSAS cubes straight away without any migration pains. And the performance met and exceeded their expectations. We showed 30-fold performance improvement on a data set that was expanded to meet their time window in the future relative to their existing solution on the existing data. Now, I mentioned it already. When we're doing our job right, PDW sits in your environment and looks like a normal SQL server. That's from a client perspective. From a sort of an overall environment perspective, You might work against PDW straight from AS and RS, or you might have an environment where you have local data marts that then use SQL Server as a back end for either the broader data set or periodic heavy lifting updates. And there's actually functionality in SQL Server PDW that allows you to create remote tables, as we call it, over InfiniBand on SQL Server that are running your data marts. So a very high-performance way of moving data from PDW to the SQL Server SMP nodes running in that hub-and-spoke model. And then I already sort of alluded to it a bit when I was talking about the customer environment, but in many of the environments out there right now, once they hit sort of the high end of what the server can handle, they will start looking at workarounds, creating summary tables, using more indices, and so forth. With PDW, a lot of that effort falls away. So there is a bit of a, you know, the question is, I mentioned already, if we're doing your job right, you work with PDW, not unlike you would work with a normal SQL Server. But there's obviously always a caveat to any statement. And in this case, there is stuff around just the nature of large data that is just intrinsic to all systems. So as you scale up data, if you have a lot more data to process, a lot of the existing tools are not optimized for that kind of work. And a lot of the existing defaults sort of need another look at. So, for example, for SSAS, some of the standard query timeout settings, they make sense in terms of a normal environment, but in sort of a large data environment, we found that sometimes they need to be adjusted. And then query design is very crucial. And this is both in terms of the execution on PDW or any other system, but also in terms of what you get back. When you're dealing with a relatively small data set, you know, you're tempted to just basically go select star from and see what comes back, and then I'll work from there. When you do that against a fully loaded MPP system or any other database system with that much data on it, you'll get into trouble both in terms of the execution time, but more importantly, everything between that system and your client, including your client, is very unlikely to be able to handle what comes back at you. So what we found in a lot of customer environments, the first kind of trial queries would saturate the network or would clobber the client system that suddenly gets millions and millions and millions of rows back. Then there's some sort of restrictions that are specific to PDW. Some of these are temporary. At this point in time, we don't support foreign keys, but that's something we're working on for future releases. But more importantly, there are some aspects that just have to do with a shared nothing MPP system, in that just the nature of the system requires you to think a bit more about your data design and your retrieval planning. In that, as I mentioned, you have data distributed across all nodes. And depending on how you join your data, to satisfy that, we will move data around. What that means is, if you have a particular query and you're adding a column just out of interest, you want another column returned, if you're not careful about it and you're just sort of adding columns because you know out of curiosity, if that column or that table that you added to the query, if that happens to be distribution misaligned with everything else you've already been doing, you will be adding a data move and you'll have sort of a big incremental step of a performance hit. And that's nothing specific to PDW in terms of how we implemented it. This is just, you know, a distributed shared nothing MPP system will have that kind of characteristic. So in addition to just you're dealing with large data, so any kind of, you know, sort of simple query will suddenly be quite costly. Because it is a shared nothing MPP system, the way you think about data design is, you know, think about what is the data that you really want returned, what is actually the data that is driving your question or your sort of, you know, the business decision. And then SQL Server PDW does well with parallel queries. So to optimize it, design your cubes for parallel processing. That's less about, you know, sort of a penalty. This is more about you have a system, you have new strengths, make sure you adjust your approach for those strengths. So at this point, unless I have questions, I'll quickly show power pivot against PDW. As I mentioned, we're not going to go into detail showing power pivot or AS in sort of the flashy details. There's a lot of sessions out there that already do that. What I want to show today is the fact that from a customer perspective, from your user out there, PDW can be used like any other SQL server. So this is a standard Excel power pivot functionality. You open a power pivot window. And actually, here's some of the details I mentioned with the further compatibility that we introduced with AU3. So prior to AU3, we had specific drivers for parallel data warehouse. So the path a user would take was, you know, basically slightly off the beaten path in terms of normal connectivity with SQL Server, both in terms of sort of the settings you set up, as well as I mentioned, the latency and the performance of the system. With AU3, you'll see this is literally the same connectivity as you get with a normal SQL Server, with the slight difference. Let me see. I can actually zoom this in a bit. With the difference that you actually have a different port that you're talking to. At this point, we don't support integrated authentication, so I'll just connect with SQL Server authentication. And I will connect to TPCH. And for demo purposes, I just loaded 10 terabytes on the system. This is a one rack, so I could have had 100 terabytes on there. But for demo purposes, 10 terabytes is plenty. And let me actually zoom out here. Sorry about that. This is, you know, as you see, this is standard SQL Server connectivity, or I should say power pivot connectivity with SQL Server. I could be selecting my source tables and working from there. I'll actually make it a bit faster for our demo, and I'll just paste in a query that I had prepared. This is a pretty simple query against TPCH, and we'll run it. So now it's running. I didn't take any special steps from a sort of a user perspective. This is as if I had pointed at any SQL Server. On the back end, however, let me refresh this. On the back end, if I look into a particular query, SQL Server PDW took that query and optimized it to run against multiple steps on all the different compute nodes. In this particular case, there are two times that the optimizer decided to move data around against the different compute nodes to satisfy the query. And if you look at that, a shuffle operation or one of these operations, this is running against all the different nodes in parallel. So it happens to be a completed step, but SQL Server PDW takes care of parallelizing the query and runs it against all the SQL servers that are doing the heavy lifting on the compute nodes. And in the end, you, from a user standpoint, get the data back just like you normally would, and you can work with it as if it were, there's no difference here between SQL Server PDW and SQL Server. So if I wanted to see the revenue by container, or if I wanted to break it into a pivot chart, all of this is standard SQL Server, I should say power pivot functionality when pulling data from SQL Server. So this is sort of the goal we have from a user standpoint in Power Pivot and AS, the incoming step is just like any other SQL server. With the awareness of, you know, I have a PDW system in the back end, advanced users can then optimize their cubes to do parallel processing, et cetera. But sort of from both existing solutions as well as users that are used to working against normal SQL Server using Power Pivot or ASRS against normal SQL Server, they have an easy migration path onto a system that can handle hundreds of terabytes. Similar situation exists for key third-party tools. So we currently have support for MicroStrategy, SAP Business Objects, and Informatica. Other tools have a bit of a mixed experience. We have SQL Server client support, but we don't support every single language element that normal SQL Server supports. So depending on what you're both doing runtime as well as sort of the design time requirements of the tool, and depending on your tool, there are sometimes things that we don't support yet. A key point here is that with the work we've done in AU3, the investments that we have lined up for the future releases are focused on this compatibility. And the goal is, when it makes sense and when it's feasible, to light up tools not by customizing the tools or customizing adapters for the tools, but by supporting the language elements and everything else the way SQL Server does. So basically, quote unquote, pretending to be normal SQL Server will solve the connectivity issues. Now we're going to move into sort of a bit of a tangent in terms of Hadoop connectivity. So if you had any questions in the previous section, okay, doesn't look like it. So who here has been to Hadoop and big data sessions this week? Okay, it looks like almost everybody. Who's already seen Hadoop or big data approaches in their existing environments or sort of are working on it right now in terms of their existing projects? Okay, fewer. So this is material I'm sure you've seen before. From an environment perspective, there are new challenges arising for business analytics. You have a huge amount of data that is currently born, quote unquote, unstructured. And this might be from sensors. This might be from mobile devices, from blogs, from just general web data. The different manufacturing environments or operational environments have more and more sensors in them and more devices that are, quote unquote, aware and sort of report their status. And corresponding with that, there's been an increase in sort of a demand for near or real-time business analytics on that data. What that means is there's a need to filter all the massive amount of unstructured data to sort of the bits and pieces that are both something you can reason about in a meaningful, structured way, and that actually represents the core business insight and business value. From that perspective, as you've seen probably in the big data sessions, Hadoop offers a really strong platform solution for that kind of accelerated ETL processes for non-structured data. So you have the fast and flexible development and sort of the handwritten refining of those ETL queries and those sort of data gathering queries. And you can keep the HDFS cluster or whatever you're using around as a cost-effective data archive and to keep the historical data practically forever. What this means for us is there's a coexistence of this kind of system and this kind of data with a system like PDW. From an end-to-end environment perspective, you want an environment where the application programmers that are closest to either your web logs or your mobile devices, et cetera, understand how to go through the unstructured data and to pull out the bits and pieces that are interesting to you. And with our Scoop connector, they can move that from the Hadoop system to SQL Server PDW, where the data can be then integrated into end-to-end solutions that use your normal relational data from driven by the normal business sources. you know, typical LOB applications and so forth. And you can reason about that data end-to-end with your normal BI tools. Leveraging all the strengths of a relational MPP system like PDW. The way this works in a bit more detail, you have a normal HDFS cluster. You read the data in parallel via mappers. So if you throw more nodes into your system, you can read more data in parallel. And with a configuration file, we allow you to configure exactly how you're connecting to the PDW appliance. And you move the data onto the appliance on the landing zone, which is, as I mentioned, is the ETL sandbox. And with the PDW Hadoop connector, you also trigger the load from the landing zone into the actual backend of the appliance. And both the reads from the HDFS cluster are parallelized, and the load from the landing zone to the compute nodes is parallelized in terms of all the compute nodes are busy receiving the data, hashing the data, moving the data into the right place in the distributed system on PDW. If you sort of thought about the details here, you'll notice, well, you're landing the file. So there is a further optimization we could be doing around just streaming the data through. This is our first iteration of this connector. So the focus has been on compatibility and on connectivity. And we have further releases planned where we'll optimize it, better performance, more functionality. So let's have a quick look at how that works. So this is normal connectivity to Linux environment. All right. Okay. So just in case you don't believe me, there we are. So what we can do here is the normal connectivity to the Hadoop file system will show you what we have running here. So currently in this environment and under this user, I just have this one file, which is actually distributed across on the Hadoop cluster. If you look into this particular file, this is actually a delimited file. Just for this sample purposes, this is 100,000 rows of a modified version of the line item table. And as I mentioned a second ago, we follow the standard approaches in terms of a configuration file in XML, specifying exactly the setup that the configuration that the Scoop connector uses when connecting to PDW. And when we run this, this runs a normal Scoop connector. It fires up all the mappers. It reads the data in parallel on the different nodes of the Hadoop cluster, and it moves the data to the landing zone. From there, as I mentioned, it triggers the loads. From the landing zone, the data moves in parallel to the different compute nodes. And so, you know, from a business environment, that data file is the end result of application programmers that went through their unstructured data and wrote a normal Hadoop routine and the normal Hadoop approach in terms of, you know, going through their data and spitting out what they think are the valuable bits and pieces in the delimited file. With the Scoop connector, you have a high-performance way of moving that back into our system. So if you look at what we just did, so this is Nexus Query Chameleon. This is the query tool that we ship with SQL Server PDW. As I mentioned earlier, we are working on support for SSMS. For now, this is the tool we use to query against PDW. The database I moved data into was the temp database, and I created a line item scoop table. So let's see. Let's make sure. Yes, we have the 100,000 rows. And let's have a look at that data. There it is. So from there on, if this had been a table that had been part of my other TPCH 10 terabyte data, we'd be running live with an end-to-end BI solution that moved data from an unstructured source through Hadoop into PDW. So really allowing customers to integrate unstructured data using the tools that already exist in the system, in their environment, for that kind of data into PDW, where they can benefit then from the faster execution of a system like PDW against the data and from integration with the data that already exists in their relational systems. One thing I wanted to sort of close on is I already mentioned a lot of things that we introduced with AU3. SQL Server PDW has been following a very agile approach. We aim for a release every 6 to 9 months. And this is enabled by the fact that we're leveraging SQL Server for much of the heavy lifting. And we're basically optimizing and unblocking functionality that exists in SQL Server with a, sort of the specific work necessary for the MPP case. And over the last 2 years or so, we've successively increased the surface area and increased the compatibility with normal SQL Server, starting with a system that was basically a translation from the acquired Data Allegro system, and then every 6 to 9 months adding significant blocks of functionality, moving the system into complete alignment with SQL Server. So some of the questions I got today were around when is SSDT support coming, when is SSMS support coming. A lot of that is in vNext. There's also some really exciting functionality coming online with the column store. There are a lot of sessions, actually, this week around the column store on the SMP side. So if you've seen that functionality, we'll be lighting that up in a PDW context with the next release. A lot of functionality around integrated authentication and sort of completing the use case on stored procedures is coming online with the next release. And we're moving towards Windows 8 and SQL Server 2012. So you'll benefit from all the optimizations and the stability improvements and some of the advanced functionality in Windows 8 and SQL Server 2012. And there's a hardware refresh coming, both in terms of sort of the continuous updates that, you know, since we're using commodity hardware, we benefit from the usual cycle that Intel and everybody else does in terms of every 18 months or every, you know, year or two. They you know, have either a new hardware architecture or a tick up in terms of the clock frequency. So we'll be benefiting from that, and we're looking at actually improving the architecture end-to-end as well. And we're doing some work around workload management, both in terms of sort of the concurrency management as well as an ability to really satisfy or help satisfy SLAs and priorities in an environment where some of the tier one BI solutions require sort of, you know, a very specific time window or require the ability to honor priorities based on which business unit is accessing the system or which user is accessing the system. So what I hope you got out of this today is an overview of SQL Server PDW. We had a bit of a mixed crowd today. Hopefully now everybody can say, yes, I know what PDW is. I've seen some details about PDW. And specifically, you know, an awareness of what's in AU3 and the applicability, the relevance of those features in a BI context. As I mentioned, PDW is a shared nothing MPP appliance that allows easy scalability for tens to hundreds of terabytes. And AU3, especially with BI solutions based on the Microsoft stack, allows you to reuse your existing BI solutions now in a system that easily scales to hundreds of terabytes. From a specific customer context, I'd expect at least 5x performance versus AU2. And as we saw, the performance difference between the common approaches when you really throw a lot of data at the systems, it's just staggering what you can achieve with PDW. So with that, there's a lot of related content out there. There's a big data related topics. There's a lot of different BI tools and AS, RS, Power Pivot related topics out there. There's also, for those interested in more of sort of the hardware optimizations, all the work we did to align I/O with CPU, with memory, and all those details, there's a TechEd session from 2010 that does a deep dive into all of those details. For those interested in terms of, you know, how does Hadoop fit into the picture, Dr. DeWitt in 2011, the past session, has a lot of context in terms of, you know, how does Hadoop fit into a picture, or where systems like PDW exist, or the other way around. These are the general track resources. I think you've seen this one often enough. I would like to encourage you to fill out the feedback. It's crucial for us to know what are we doing well, what are we, you know, need to improve on, and how can we do this better next year. With this, I'd like to actually open it up to questions. I hope I left some time. Yeah?
I have two questions. One is, are there any plans to change the isolation labels to those
points? So currently, SQL Server PDW only supports read uncommitted. That is sort of the typical isolation level you'll get with a system like this, or for that kind of an environment in terms of the data warehousing queries. We are working on the other isolation levels. And it's coming in the next releases. I'm sorry, what? Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So let me repeat the question. So the question was, are we working on providing sort of a whole MPP, so the whole PDW system virtualized, so a user can use it sort of as a test environment, as a dev environment, and also just, you know, potentially just as a solution in of itself in terms of you have everything virtualized and then you put whatever hardware behind it that you want. We are working on having solutions that allow you to test and dev against something that isn't running on a full PDW appliance. As to the second part of your question in terms of, you know, running in VMs but not against the actual hardware, I'm not sure where we'll go with that. A lot of the benefit of something like PDW is in the fact that the time to solution, the performance, and so forth, is from the fact that we optimize for a particular set of hardware and for particular lineup. The moment you move off of it and you just sort of allow flexible configuration of everything, then you get into the usual problem of, you know, well, how do I tune this? I did it slightly differently, but now I have all these performance bottlenecks. Where's my issue? Right? So does that make sense? Yeah?
Just from an ETL point of view. Mm-hmm.
So we have an SSIS destination adapter that allows you to connect to your data flows to PDW, to move data to PDW from SSIS or using SSIS.
Is there any sort of special classes with different parts of your data sets.
Mm-hmm. So that's transparent to you. The distributed nature is apparent mostly through one thing, which is when you do the data modeling, you need to be aware of the fact that we have replicated tables. Those are the tables that I mentioned earlier as the dimension tables, that are the small tables that get copied across every node. And you have the distributed tables, which are your fact tables, which are sliced, you know, across. You have to be aware in the beginning, or you know, if you're the person putting together the data model, you should be aware in the beginning, where do I expect most of the data to sit? What are the query patterns I expect? And then you make that decision. Once that decision's made, when you configure your SSIS flows and so forth, whether it's a distributed or replicated table, the system accepts a load, and we do the distribution on our end. So an ETL process doesn't connect to all the different nodes, to the 10 or 20 or 40 compute nodes. It connects to PDW, and PDW handles the load. So let me, I can go to a specific slide. This is going to be too complicated. I'll share the slide with you later. There's a lot of HA and fault tolerance features in the appliance. We don't have a single point of failure. So for example, on the compute node side, there's a spare compute node. On a particular rack, the compute nodes are clustered. If you lose a compute node, which already in all likelihood requires multiple failures because individual components in the nodes are already redundant. If you lose that, you'll fail over to that spare node. Also at the software level, we've gone very, very far in terms of leveraging Windows failover functionality in terms of the redundancy and the failover and restart behavior of our services. So if you have a software problem, the first instance is that the system tries to recover itself by restarting individual services. On the storage side, the SAN nodes are redundant in terms of the individual components in them. In terms of the network connectivity, we have full redundancy for the individual links. So does that answer your question? It's a tier one solution. HA is very high up there in terms of the requirements. Okay. Yep. Okay. So the question was if I understand you correctly, I mentioned sort of the data modeling of a data warehouse and so forth, and how do I rationalize that with moving unstructured data into the environment. Is that right? Into that picture. So, there's two parts here. One is I have the data model itself, and I think about here's my data model on the appliance, and here's the workload, the queries I want to get out of it. And then there's a second one, which is I have unstructured data out there. Who's going to think about the unstructured data in terms of pulling out the specific bits of knowledge that I can glean from that? And then, as you mentioned, there's sort of the interface between, okay, I'm pushing this data out. Where does it end up, right? So when I'm putting this data model together, presumably in cooperation with a person who understands what is worthwhile data on the unstructured side, I need to decide this target table, is this going to be a distributed or a replicated table? What's the schema of this table? And, what are the data types, et cetera? In all likelihood, given the kind of nature of the data that you're trying to get from the unstructured side, you'll probably be creating a distributed table on the PDW system for this kind of data. Because if it's sensor readings from millions and millions of sensors out there, or data coming back from millions and millions of mobile devices and so forth, it's typically a fact table that you're creating. Does that make sense? Is that what you were looking for? Yeah. So in the DDL for table creation, we have standard SQL Server syntax extended to take into account sort of the additional distributed nature. So if you specify a normal create table DDL, you'll end up with a replicated table. And if you, in addition, specify what column you want to distribute on, your hash distribution column, then the system will create a distributed table for you from the table creation perspective. From a query perspective, then that's transparent to you. You just write a normal SQL query, and the system just optimizes it for you. So from a development point of view, there's a few things to keep in mind. One is the system does support multi-tenancy, so you could have multiple databases on the system. A second is we offer a dev appliance, a sort of a scaled-down hardware offering. Another is that actually a lot of environments have requirements around having duplicate systems where dev and test and production need identical systems. So for many IT environments, they'll just have an extra set of hardware around. And as we mentioned, sort of going forward, at some point in time, it's likely we'll have something VM-based. It gets tricky, though, because very quickly, in terms of dev and testing, on these tier one solutions, you want to play with the real deal because you want to know what the performance looks like, right? All right. Okay. Any other questions? Excellent. Thank you very much. And as I mentioned.